14 when he made his first trip to the Boy Scout camp in the forests of Sequoia Park. That was 1939, and the first of more than 60 years at camp. After that summer, the Sierra and Wilmerton were a big part of his life for the rest of his life. Art and Wilmerton are woven together in my mind. I can't think of one without the other. So where do I start? Well, art became part of my life in 1962. We met at Wilmerton. He was the camp doctor, or at least I thought he was. He was everything I thought a doctor should be, only to find out that very few doctors were like Art. So I stuck with Art. He always got to know you as he treated your blister, bandaged your hand, or pulled out a splinter. He looked at the whole person, not just the splinter. After that, Art was always part of my life, at Wilmerton, at home, as a mentor, as a friend, and even as an employee, as if anybody could supervise him. The thing about Art that always got me is he was timeless. He never got older. I did. And I thought that's the way it always should be. And then all one year I said, Art, you know, I got this ache and this pain. And he looked at me and said, it's hard to be old like us. And all of a sudden, that 20-year difference, this guy jumped it. All of a sudden, I'm 20 years older. I'm as old as Art now. That buffer disappeared, and in a flash, I was the same age as Art. Until 4 or 5 years ago, Art spent 2 weeks or often a month at camp every summer. When he was there, he did whatever needed to be done. He holds the record for mopping the kitchen floor, cleaning the latrines, getting the mail, administering first aid, greeting troops. He was Wolverton. He was Mr. Wolverton. His car came up with him every year, and it was like his house. It had everything. If you hungered for some salami, he could find it in there. If you needed a wedge for a handle of a splitting ball, it was there somewhere. It's a miracle that a bear never broke in. It was probably too overwhelmed by the opportunities. So a few deer mice and a marmot or two ended up on Ashland Avenue, I'm sure. He would spend the whole summer trying to find the mouse that was living in his trunk. The only argument I ever had with him was over the car. I thought it would be better to get the car out of camp. And I thought Art would be the first person to say, what a good idea. Boy, he dug in his heels. He said he'd go home before he moved that car. And I was amazed. And then I realized it wasn't a car. It was a duffel bag. It couldn't be separated from it. But you never knew when you needed one of the treasures it contained. In the mid-1980s, several of us hiked up into the Tablelands for a few days, one of his favorite places. We thought he wanted to go, but he complained about various aches and pains and that he would stay in camp. The next day, near dusk, I heard the faintest yoo-hoo that I've ever heard in my life. It was barely audible, but I searched all over for the source. It was Art. He had walked 9 miles, 3 of them cross-country, climbed 3,000 feet, and found our camp while carrying a 50-pound pack. When asked why he came all that way in one day, he said, I didn't like being alone. Did I tell you about his pack? It was like his car. He never threw anything away because you never know if you'll need it. Extra batteries, candles, shoelace, Tabasco sauce, Swiss cheese, you name it, he had it. Rare teas and tins, cocoa, and when we were older, a nip of brandy, much older. He always set his stove up next to his sleeping bag so he could have coffee in bed. Once he even pulled out in Los Angeles Times that he hadn't had a chance to read. It was a Sunday edition. Art could walk all day. He could outwalk any of us, but his distance he covered wasn't determined by his speed, the steepness of the trail, the quality of the trail. It was only determined by the number of people on the trail. His Art stopped and talked to everybody. Within 5 minutes, he had their life history. And then he remembered them all and shared them at the end of the day. So if it was a busy trail, he'd be lucky to make a mile or two a day. One of his favorite walks was through giant forests, anytime, any season, any trail. He never tired of these giant trees, nor do I. He told me more than once his ideal day was a walk in giant forest, dinner at camp, and sitting around the campfire. Mine too. He taught my oldest son to read. He didn't know he was doing that, but he did. One day we were in camp, and Max asked, Art, would you read to me? And so Art did. But every 5 minutes, Art nodded off. And Max would wake him up and say, "Art, can you read to me?" And he'd read for 5 more minutes and nod off. After doing that 4 or 5 times, Max thought it would be better if he learned to read. I don't thank Art for that, but I think Max reads today because of Art. We took a lot of long backpacks together. The last one was in the Dead Man's Canyon, 60 miles, while guiding 6 members of the Parks Natural History Association. All went well when we started a 3,500-foot descent off of Elizabeth Pass. Our knees were killing us. Mine were killing him, me, his were killing him, but we didn't share that. We'd been walking for 6 hours and still had 3 more miles to go. At the last possible campsite, he sat down and said, he wanted to camp, would I mind? Would I mind? I could have kissed him. It turned out to be the best camp we had the whole trip. When Art retired, he worked for me. He worked with me for a few years. We often were on the road for a long time, went all around California. When passing through Camp Pendleton, he told me he was stationed there during World War II as a medic. After training, he waited for months for something to happen. Nothing did. He was anxious for something, for anything. So he did something he said he would never do. He volunteered for a special assignment. Wasn't told what it was, but he just couldn't stand it anymore. So he and a buddy volunteered. Shortly after that, the rest of the medics joined the Marines about to assault Iwo Jima. Many never returned. But Art spent the rest of the war showing movies about the dangers of venereal disease to young Marines. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. Art was a friend when I needed one most. He sat with me when my wife was undergoing chemotherapy. He would just come and sit for hours and just be there. He always knew what was important, and he always took the time to do it. His last visit to the camp was in 2002. He joined Alden Barber, the founder of the camp, and a former chief scout executive, by the way, and several other scouts from that era. They spent the weekend eating too much, drinking too much, and sharing thousands of stories about Sequoia. Sadly, none of them had been to camp for over 50 years, except for Art. He missed only 3 summers since 1939, and that took a world war. Several years ago, he made me promise that I would see that his ashes were taken to the pig lands that he loved so much. My first reaction was, "What are you trying to tell me, Art?" And he assured me that it was just preparing for the inevitable, and he wanted to make sure I was on for it. A promise made is a debt unpaid, and I'm honored that Art asked me, more than honored. When he asked me to take him back to the Sierra he loved so much. Art seemed to always hate goodbyes at camp. He would leave at 4 a.m. to avoid them, or wait till we were all preoccupied and doing something else, and then just slip away, and then Art was gone. "We'll miss you, Art. Camp won't be the same without you. See you later."